Good morning and welcome to day four on day three with Frank Scalish. This is day four, number 65. Uncle Frank.
65 in the books. I'm going to crank my volume up here a little.
I think we're both kind of struggling a little bit this morning on a Wednesday. We've got massive storms in the OKC area. It feels like, I've never been there, but I would imagine it feels like what it lives to be in like Seattle or Portland.
Dude,
just like one of those dark, dark mornings.
It's 100% exactly the way it is here, as usual. I mean, we are the new Seattle. I mean, it's just, this spring has been on again, off again, rain, like nonstop. The fishing's pretty good. I mean, I got to be honest with you, some of the fishing is pretty good. But it's just been very difficult. You know, I filmed those bait school videos and stuff.
Right.
And trying to get out and film videos, it's a little difficult when it's raining and you got 20 mile an hour winds. It's not so much that we don't have protection for the cameras. It's you get the wind blowing all the rain on the lenses and you can't keep a clean lens.
Or fish your bait properly.
Sometimes, yes. And so it's really been kind of difficult, it frustrates me a lot. You know what I mean? Because I'm at peace when I'm on the front deck of my bass boat. That's where I feel my most peace in life is on the front deck of that boat. And so when I can't get out all the time, it's frustrating me. And I'm seeing a lot of the guys in my area. They're posting good smallmouth picks. I mean, the smallmouth fishery's fired up. Some of our largemouth lakes, our shallower largemouth lakes, are just on fire. And it's like, holy smokes, I can't miss this spring.
Happens up north quick, doesn't it?
Yeah,
like, I mean, it's like not that. Like in Oklahoma where it's like this gradual deal. Like up north, it's like a week and it goes from basic, not dormant, but like really slow to like, bam, you're catching.
Yeah, and that's the coolest thing about being up north is when it goes off fast. The unfortunate thing about being up north is if you're like most people and have a job and you can only fish on the weekends, you miss one weekend, you're talking 2 weeks by the time you hit the water and things have changed dramatically, like dramatically changed. I remember on this one lake this year, I was out on ice out, catching them on swim jigs. And then I didn't get out for a while. And those fish went right to the bushes in like 1 to 2 feet of water. And I'm like going, wait a minute. I wanted to catch more swim jig fish. You know what I mean? And so, it just happens so fast. And that's how up north is. I mean, it's, you know, your guys' spawn will last quite a bit longer than our spawn will. Where your spawn could last 2 months, you know, trickle in, trickle out, main spawn. You know what I'm saying? You get the beginners, the main spawn, and then the late spawners. Ours will be done in 4 weeks. It just happens like that. Hmm. And, you know, that's the way it is. But, you know, today, you know, we talk a lot about the fans on BTL.
Yeah.
And I have to tell this story. So I'll make it really condensed for you guys.
It's your show. You can draw it out however long you want, Frank. You can make it half an hour. I'm okay. All ears. You have a captive audience here.
That's right. You guys are, you're caught. So as you all know, that anyone who has ever DM'd me, I respond back. And sometimes it takes a long time to go through them all, but I respond to all of them. And so I had gotten an instant message from a guy, and I don't know if I
direct message, instant message, back to the days of AOL, Frank.
All right, so I'm not technically savvy.
He IM'd you after you logged onto the internet.
You've got mail. So you know I'm not technologically savvy, except for when it comes to my locators and, of course, making and painting lures. So anyway, so this I'll call him Mr. Welch, reaches out to me and says, hey, my son is a huge fan of yours. Would it be okay if you talk to him? He's got a huge Norman Lure collection. Now, obviously, his father loves Norman Lures, so hence, you know, because no 8-year-old's going to wake up and go, hey, give me, I want Norman Lures.
Oh, so he's eight. He's eight.
Yeah, he's actually
I thought you were going to be like, he's 32?
Yeah, he's 40. No, so he's 8.5 years old. So okay. I said, yeah, sure. Yeah, I'll call him. Give me your number. So he DMs me his phone number, and I call, and I talk to this little guy. And he was, and you know how excited little kids can get. Like sometimes they get so excited, they're amped up, they can't really process. So he's like, hey, and then he puts the phone down, and I can hear him running around, and then he picks the phone back up, and we start to talk. He settles down, his father settles him down, and we talk, and I'm having a conversation with an 8.5-year-old. And he's asking me questions about painting lures and what kind of air, you know, brush he should get and, you know, all this stuff. And then, of course, we're jumping back and forth between Norman crankbaits and, you know, it's all over the board. We're talking, you know, eight kid tension span that big, you know. So anyhow, it was a blast. I don't even know how long I talked to this kid for. Well, him and his father. So it was a blast. So lo and behold, time goes by, not a lot of time, but, you know, several months go by, and periodically his father would reach out and say, hey, you know, Weston's doing this or Weston's doing that. That's the little boy's name is Weston. So he says, hey, he painted some lures. He wants to show you some lures. So I said, okay, let's just, you know, talk on the phone and we'll go video to video. So we do that. Kid's showing me all stuff. He's amped up. And it's kind of cool. Okay. And then I give him my address, his father, my address, because his father wanted to send me an old Norman. Lo and behold, I get a hand-painted lure from Weston. He's 8.5 years old, so he sends me this lure, and I said, I promise you, I will show the lure on Bass Talk Live. So here we go. Weston painted this.
Oh, that's way better than I could have done. Look at that. Looks really good.
Isn't that cool?
That looks awesome.
Right. Absolutely.
That's phenomenal.
Right. 8 years old, 8.5 years old.
What kind of technique is that called?
You wrap, well, you can use anything. Like, you can even use, like, an old potato sack. You wrap it around the bait, and you create marbling. But what you do is you paint the chartreuse and the pink first. Then you wrap your marbling material around the bait, and then you spray it. And so anywhere the material touches, there won't be any black.
Yeah, that looks professionally done.
Yeah. Swear to God. So here, so little Weston sends me a little video of him painting a wiggle wart. All right. I literally was talking to him on the phone, and he was asking me about colors. Can I use this color? Can I use that color? And I said, Wes, the cool thing about making stuff yourself is you could do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. So if you like those colors, use those colors. So lo and behold, later on that day, his father sends me a video, and here's this little kid painting a wiggle wart. And it was cool. I mean, it was super cool. So shout out to Weston Welch, my little painter. Here you go, buddy.
That's very impressive.
This one's for you. Yeah. So, you know, it was cool. I said, that's fantastic. A lot of you guys DM me, and the questions are great. Some of you guys are so funny, I can't even stand it. I'll be going through them, and I'll just be, like, crying laughing. So it's a lot of fun, and this is, you know, for you guys, which is why we do stuff like the BTL code for LureNet, capital Bass Talk.
Hold
all
on,
cap.
I wasn't expecting that smooth of a transition. You got to give me a second.
This show is live and not rehearsed. You got to admit that was smooth. It was
is
smooth.
Is that it?
Yeah, there it is. Bass Capital.
Holy cow, Craig.
So my bad. My bad, dude. Come on, you got to stay sharp.
All right, so, yeah. Sorry. Start it over again.
So, yeah, so we're, you know, the Bass Talk code, capital Bass Talk, one
not
word.
Not live, just Bass Talk.
Just Bass Talk, one
B-A-S-S-T-A-L-K, all capital letters.
Right. And it's, remember, it goes on to the end of the month. I think it's over on the 31st or the 30th, however many days are in this beautiful spring month. So anyhow, so yeah, so that's, you know, that's it. You know, use that code. It's 15% off any purchase on LureNet. And I mean, I hope you guys enjoyed that story of this little kid. And I've actually talked to him several times since then. And he is fired up. He's a great little kid.
I actually just came across my first airbrush paintings and airbrushed base that I made, because I only made two of them before I realized that's a lot of work and I suck at this. But I was going to show mine, but after seeing what Weston did, it looks like mine was like, my paint job looks like a hippie fell in a mud puddle compared to that.
And there's nothing wrong with that. So yeah, but you know, we're talking about painting. I just, I don't have them with me. They're downstairs. I should have brought them up, but I just painted three new colors that are going to be released for Norman Fat Boys. And man alive, you guys, I'm redoing a lot of colors right now for Norman. Now, some of these won't be out, obviously, for a while, because you got to do production and you got to keep your mainstays going and then you add on as you go.
Right.
So it's a process, but the thing that I'm really excited about is we're really going to grow Norman hardcore. We're really putting a lot of effort into this brand, because in my opinion, it's one of the best crankbait brands on the planet. I've been fishing them since I was a boy, and you know, so happy to have the chance to work with this company. It's just unbelievable. But you know, I mean, I bloviated. I what did I do? Did I talk over 20 minutes of our show already?
No, that was fine. That was fine. I know we have a good show today. We're actually, it's hard to believe that we went from, it seems like just a couple weeks ago, we were talking about like late winter patterns and pre-spawn, mm-hmm. and we're actually going to get some fish on top. We have a couple of pressing questions that we need to get before we go. And let's go. King of Kentucky said, good morning, Frank. What's the longest you've driven your rig before realizing you didn't unplug your boat? I made it 10 miles dragging a 100-foot cord behind me yesterday morning.
Hey, King of Kentucky, I'm going to tell you a story, and you guys are going to fall out laughing. A long time ago, we were – I don't even know if I should mention this place, man. I might get in trouble. A long time ago, we were on Bassmasters, we went to a lake in some of our southern state near here, but not super close to here.
Wait, how could you go to a lake in a southern state near here? You're up in
forget it. I was in South Carolina, okay?
Okay.
I'll just tell the story. I don't care. It was 100 years ago, so come and get me. So we were on Santee Cooper, and we were staying at this hotel, and everybody that stays in this hotel parks on the grass and line up the boats, and we run the cords out, and there's a beautiful little white fence that you back your boat up to and yada, yada, yada. Well, I, because of my anal retentive gene and probably somewhat of a moron back then, I said, I'm wrapping this cord around this picket fence, so if somebody trips on it, they don't pull it out of my battery charger and then I don't get a charge. So I wrapped it around my cleat on the boat, plugged it in, and then wrapped it around the fence and tied it up on the fence. So if they hit it, they'll trip over it, but they're not going to pull the plugs out of the wall or pull the plug out of my boat.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
In my overzealousness to be the first imbecile out of that parking lot and into the lake, I got everything ready. I uncovered the boat. I threw the cover in the back of the pickup truck. I'm like, I'm out of here. Whoa, in gear I go, down the grass field I go. I look in my rearview mirror and I'm dragging 30 yards of picket fence behind me. I was literally dragging half of this stupid fence.
You just
with
uprooted
me.
It.
I totally pulled it right out of the ground, dude. So I'm like, holy smokes. So I get out, I untie all the cords, and I'm dragging the fence back to where it was, and I'm sticking it back in. It broke all the posts right at ground level. I was like, you know, you see those movies where somebody does something wrong, and they're like, and they look around to see if anybody's looking at them. I'm like, who saw that? But yeah, I've done stupid things with my charging cord for sure.
So what'd you do? Just left it propped up?
I got it to stand up again. I, you know, where it broke off on all the posts, I set it inside and stamped it down.
It
so it was
down,
like
so
a puzzle. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No,
but if you would have just breathed
more
on
decorative
it,
anyway, it's not like there were like goats or anything. In
no,
there.
They didn't
know. In the yard.
No, the only thing that place held was bed bugs, but, but yeah, so I've done some stupid things with my charging cord before.
All right, and then we also have a show idea from William Clark. He said you need to do a show on cutting costs on the water, ways to fish on a budget.
Ooh, that's a good show. I'm writing that down.
Make a note of that one. And then Luke Bryant said, I've never seen this before. He said, totally unrelated.
Those are the best kind.
He said, but I saw two muskie spawning, and it was possibly the coolest thing I've ever laid eyes on. You ever seen that?
Yeah. Yeah. You're talking about 3-foot-plus fish, dude. It's pretty cool.
They spawn just like, I mean, they have a bed and everything, or how does that work?
They kind of roll around on each other. They stay together, and they move together in unison. And they're, but you're talking about fish that are 40-plus inches long. It's really wild. It is really wild. I actually love musky fishing. I musky fish a lot for fun, and to the dismay of my son Frankie, who is like, "Why aren't we bass fishing?" I go, "Just shut up and keep fishing." You know,
it's not like a musky like lives like it's like a wolf, right? Like it has a territory. So like when you're fishing for a musky, you're fishing for like the musky that lives in that. However many acres it patrols.
Yeah. So here's, we're really going off a deep path here, but so here's what happens. Like if I'm bass fishing and I raise a muskie, I remember where I raised them. And then I'll go back another day and catch them. One time Frankie and I were filming and I raised like five of them and actually hooked a couple by accident. We were bass fishing and, So what happened was, I'm like, hey, dude, you want to come back here tomorrow and catch these? He's like, I can't, Dad. I got to work. And I'm like, oh, that's too bad. So I called a buddy of mine up. I said, hey, I'm on some muskies. You want to go catch some? He's like, yeah, sure. So when I put 9 muskies in the boat.
Wow.
That day.
Now, can you catch bass around those predator fish, or will they vacate the area when there's an active muskie?
I've found that when the muskies... when the muskie's in an area, and I don't mean like a 100-yard area, I mean his immediate area, you won't catch a bass. But muskie fishing, I have caught lots of bass. When I stop catching bass as I'm moving my way down a contour line or what have you, as I stop catching bass, then I know I'm probably getting close to some muskies.
Oh.
It's not a guarantee, though. It's not a guarantee, because if the bass is shallow under brush and the muskie's out over a channel ledge, they're not going to coincide with each other. Even though they're a cast and a half away, they're not coinciding with each other.
Because I thought it was interesting, you know, like I've salmon trout fished around where there's seals and things like that, and that shut the bite down, like it's done there. But you know, like at Ross Barnett or down in Florida, you can flip 5 feet from a 10-foot gator and get a bass bite.
Mm-hmm.
Like they don't seem to be, I guess, deterred or scared of the gator.
No, most of the time, if an alligator gets a bass, the bass is dead or dying. They can catch them alive, but bass are very quick. You know, alligators are real fast when they snap.
Mm-hmm.
They're super fast.
Well, no, I'm well aware of that. Yeah. I was in a backwater area and not gotten a bite in a couple hours, pull out the white swim jig, and I literally made a cast and put it on one's nose and did not see it. So I just thought I was casting to a little open hole in the grass.
Yeah.
And that swim jig hit the water and the whole grass mat just
exploded.
And it scared the heck out of me.
Yeah, I did. I did exactly the same thing in Florida. I was I was throwing frogs and super flukes. And I thought it was a log, dude. I swear to God. You know, I was in all these lily pad roots. You know how in Florida sometimes you'll reach a section and all the pad roots come to the top and they're all bumpy and gnarly, and they got the same kind of markings that on the back of an alligator would have. And I launched that frog out there, dude. And that thing erupted and I was like, uh-oh. I got this thing on 50-pound braid and the battle was on. I lost that battle in a big fluffy way. But anyhow, yeah, that's funny. But yeah, gators, you got to love them.
What are we talking about today?
I really, because we're getting into it here. It's coming up like super soon. Last year I cut a video, didn't air it last year, okay, because I had other videos coming out and I wanted to keep the videos in a timely sequence. Well, this fell out of sequence, this video, last year. So I said, we're going to run it this year, but we're going to run it 2 to 3 weeks before it's relevant. And it's getting relevant now. So it's out. Prop baits for spawning bass, basically. But I want to talk about these prop baits, and I want to explain something, because one of my favorite prop baits is a Cotton Cordell Crazy Shad, and I don't think you need to blow this up, but you could.
I'm blowing it up anyway.
All right, so it's a Cotton.
We need the thumbnail there, Frank.
Gotcha, Cotton Cordell. We are just doing great today. It's a Cotton Cordell Crazy Shad. One of my
favorite. Hold it down just a little lower, and then look intently at it. Beautiful. There you go. Now we got the thumbnail.
So
carry on.
This is one of my all-time favorites. Now I got turned on to this early on, but I was fishing it on the Ohio River, Coosa River, and spotted bass fisheries really is where I started really super tuning on this bait. So I've been fishing it for decades, okay? I'll change. We talked about this bait before, but I put two split rings on it. Get the hook away. Now this one's right out of the package, but I'll put two split rings on it, get the hooks dropped down a little bit farther, increases your hooking percentage, but that's not really what we're going to talk about today. There is when in the springtime, when the bass start to spawn, this bait becomes magnificent. Largemouth, smallmouth, spotted bass. It, for whatever the reason, this thing is incredibly appealing to these spawners and post spawners. So what I did last year, I shot this video and I was catching mixed bag. I was catching largemouth and smallmouth on it, over spawning flats. So what I kind of want to talk about is I want to talk about some things to look for and to really, so you can really hone in on these springtime topwater patterns. Let me mention a couple other prop baits that work as well. All right. The Devil's Horse, the Smithwick Devil's Horse got its claim to fame in Florida, basically. Very slender bait. It's a very slender bait, represents, you know, needlefish, which is found in Florida. It's a real slender bait. This is another one of my all-time favorite prop baits. But What people don't understand is that this bait here works up north on smallmouths, largemouths, and it also works where you have spotted bass. For whatever the reason, these prop baits are very appealing. So here we'll have to get to the nitty gritty, because here's, I want to tell you guys what to look for. I want to tell you how to fish this thing. So I have a video out. It's on LureNet YouTube right now. It's basically fishing the crazy shad over the spawn. It's a great little video to watch because it really narrows down things. Oh yeah, that's a blow up right there. So here what I did was I wound up getting on this big grass flat, and I saw the holes in the grass, and the largemouth were spawning in these holes. And so basically I was fan casting the crazy shad over top of these holes. Now you can see there's a little breeze coming down, so the ripples were making it impossible for me to see some of this as I was working down this flat. It was really impossible. So I just started randomly fan casting on this flat, knowing that I had seen spawners there, earlier before the wind started to pick up. And I railed them. I mean, this was one of the easiest shows I've ever done. I mean, it was just going off like clockwork. And in fact, I went back there after the spawn and annihilated them again after
the spawn. Okay, yeah, they're on the bed. I noticed there you were fishing next to a swim beach. I found swim beaches are most productive when you're making long casts into the swim beach. And the more people are swimming, the more it kind of stirs up the crayfish. So I like to cast as close to the people as possible.
Yeah, and if you're lucky, you can catch a swimmer, and man, do they fight. But yeah, so anyway, so for the largemouth on this particular lake, I was actually looking for these big expansive grass flats, and the nice thing about it is so it was so much fun. I was like losing my mind filming this. It was so much fun. So basically what I did was I looked for bottom composition. This was coontail, and it was growing on some sandy areas. So I just looked for sand flats that had a good break off the edge of the flats. Now, some of these flats were 30 yards offshore. Some of them were 40. Some of them were 10 feet offshore. You know, I kept my boat where the first break was and cast it up onto the flat and just kept working my way down the flat. And literally, you'll see a smallmouth dog this bait right here.
Ooh, right there.
Yeah, he was dogging on the bait.
I thought that was a smallmouth. Look at that.
Right there. Did you see that? Right there. he's right behind the bait. Yeah. But that's how this action was the entire day. It was so much. It was one of the funnest videos. Now watch this. Now here's a smallmouth trick. Smallmouth in the spring when they spawn, they absolutely love retaining walls. Whether the walls are wood or metal, they absolutely love retaining walls. Well, I learned this fishing for spotted bass on the Coosa River. Every retaining wall that I came to, okay, had spotted bass on it. So I would lay that crazy shad perfectly parallel right up to the spawning, right up to the retaining walls, and I was absolutely destroying the spotted bass. So I knew up north that in the springtime, we concentrate a lot of times on man-made retaining walls for smallmouth when they start to move in for pre-spawn. So I just started applying that crazy shad technique up here and just hammer the smallmouth on it.
That looks like Cayuga.
It's a very similar lake in makeup. It's a very similar lake in makeup. Good call, Matt.
Well, just that kind of grass patch out there with the retaining wall. Is that retaining wall something I need to look at for early July on Oneida?
It depends on how their spring's going. But Oneida, you'll probably get a mixed bag on the retaining walls at Oneida. Oneida, I would be off on the grass flats.
But I just meant like on the retaining, I mean, they'll still spawn on retaining walls all across the country like that.
100%.
On lakes where there's mixed species, you know,
especially smallmouth love species. Them. Smallmouth love them.
Why? Because they don't have to worry about protecting the nest from they, through 180 degrees or because.
Yeah, they get they get a backstop. And so they only have to focus on a couple directions. They get a backstop. They just love retaining walls in general.
But that's why fish spawn next to stuff, right?
Right.
It's less work for them.
And it offers a sense of security, and sometimes it's a false sense of security, but it offers them a sense of security. You know, fish behave only to survive. We give fish way more credit for being intelligent creatures. All they do is survive, try to survive. So, yeah, when you're on a fishery with multi-species, right, each species is going to inhabit a different area. Like here, when I got off of, these were some of the smallmouth that I was catching that day. You can see I have the double split ring on there. Now, I have tail feathers on that hook, and you know I tie my tail feathers insanely sparse, so they're wet, so you can't see them out of the water, really. But yeah, it's crazy. And so so let me backtrack, cause I'm losing my mind right now. I'm going in a million directions.
Sorry,
so
I keep throwing stuff up there.
That's okay. So on this particular lake, it's a mix. You get smallmouth and largemouth in it. So when I went to target the largemouth in the morning, I picked these long grass flats, these shallow grass, sandy grass flats. Okay. Now smallmouth will use them as well, but there's other parts of this lake that have more gravel substrate on the bottom and little bit steeper breaks. So when I left the largemouth flats, I went to these gravelly breaks, transition from largemouth to smallmouth. There's still grass that grows there because it's not all solid bottom. There's patches. So you got these mixed patches of grass. And of course you got boat docks and everything else thrown into the mix. But the main thing I was looking for was this gravelly bottom and patchy grass, because the bass weren't necessarily in the boat docks, although they use them. Mm-hmm. That really wasn't the pattern of that day. And for as many largemouth as I caught in the morning, I caught even more smallmouth later in the afternoon. And it was bright and sunny out. I mean, it wasn't cloudy. It wasn't overcast. It was bright sun. And they were just absolutely mashing that thing. That color I was throwing there is Smoky Joe. There's a lot of colors. There's chrome blue, chrome black. I got some translucent colors like moon eye shad. You know, here I'll show you moon eye shad if you can see it. This is one of my favorite mm-hmm. colors. It's semi-transparent. Okay. Moon eye shad, really good bait fish representation. But it has that gut bag on it because I paint all my semi-transparent ones with that. And it's just a great bait. It's a very overlooked bait. I don't see a whole lot of guys throwing them. And I throw them like mad. In fact, I have my collection.
Okay, so I notice here you do not have a speed clip.
No, I tie directly to the line on that bait. And what I do is I have a braid mainline, either 10 or 15 pound braid mainline. And then I'll go with anything from 12 to 17 pound mono as a leader line. Two things happen with that. A, mono floats. B, the bait won't hang up in the mono because it's a little more rigid than braid. If you tie braid, you could tie braid directly to that and it'll be fine because braid floats. But what I found is that braid gets soft after use, and then it starts to wrap around the front prop.
Yeah, that's not good when you get braid around props.
No, and you can see here, I got a pretty tight line going on this thing, and that line is actually moving away from that prop, and I have a pretty tight line on it. So that's kind of how I do that.
You ever put the bobber stop in front to keep it from getting into the prop like they do in Florida?
No, I've never really done that on purpose. Now sometimes when I have braid on a frog rod, if I make the switch, I'll have bobber stops on my frog sometimes, and then because I'll use it as a double duty rod, heavy flipping or frogging, and then I'll have a bobber stop on it, and then I just leave it. I don't take it off, but I don't do it intentionally.
Ben says he's tried it before and his bait was spinning, not the blades, when he was doing the short pulls. Any little tweaks or anything you can do to make sure
Yeah,
he's running properly?
he probably had it too tight to the prop. The hook in the bait where there's a nose cone. There's two nose cones. They're reversed, so they point at each other, and the prop's in the middle of the nose cone. So sometimes if that gap is too tight
You're
in the
talking about
back,
right
right
here.
there. So see how loose that is? See how my prop is like really loose? I make sure that that's loose all the time. And I
And what
don't
do you do?
really,
Back it out? You back it out one if it's too tight, or?
well, it's not as those aren't screwed in. They're
Oh.
kind of molded in, but they're malleable, so you could rebend it easy as cake. And I use a round jeweler plier and just pull it away from, I pull it away from the prop. Here, let me see if I could show you on here. Oh yeah, I can. See, now this one's right out of the package. This one's right out of the package, and it's pretty darn good. I mean, look at that. I mean, it's pretty good. It's got a lot of movement to it. That's pretty good. That's what you're looking for. But if you get one that's a little tight, you just take where the O-rings connected, and you just put your jeweler pliers in there, and you pull the bottom of the circle back a little bit, and you can create the space in here. Now, the front one should never be tight. Look at how much space is between that. So if you're getting rolling and the props aren't moving, there's something wrong. Either you bent the props by mistake, because I've not had too many of them
Now, do you ever
that don't
cup the
work.
props intentionally, angle them out forward, back? I know some of the prop bait guys, the prop bait is a mystery to me. Like, I know it works. I know guys catch fish on it, but I'm by no means a prop bait expert, but I do know that some of those guys talk about cupping the prop more, flattening it more, depending on the gurgle versus a spit.
You can twist them opposite. You could bend them back or you can bend them forward. Now, what I like to do is I don't monkey with them too much as long as the sound is right. If I'm not getting the sound I want, then I start to play with the
What's the
blades a
right
little bit.
sound that you're looking for?
It kind of just goes. It's real subtle. I don't even fish this bait like a maniac. I just pull it. It goes, and then I just twitch it a couple times and leave it there. And then I pull it, and then I just twitch it a couple times and leave it there. Sometimes I'll fish it. Like if I know I'm in a hole over a grass and I know there's a bass down there, I'll keep it over the hole. I'll just move it and let it swim its way back, and then move it and it goes back, move it and goes back. As long as I can, as slow as I can, I try to keep it over that hole. Now, if I'm fishing, walls and stuff, I'll work it down the wall, but I'll throw right up against the wall. I mean, yeah, like literally it'll be banging into the corrugated wall or into the railroad tie wall, or even on riprap, I'll throw it right on the riprap. A lot of times those bass in riprap situations, they're actually down there and they're facing the riprap a lot of times, waiting for, crayfish or something to get between them and the surface of the water and the rocks, because they can literally pin them up against the rock. Like they can use the rock as a stopping point for the bait, and they face it and they can literally pin them right against it. And a perfect like the perfect thing is, how sometimes when you're square bill and riprap, you make the roll cast out there and you literally are, that far off the rock, and the fish just come boosh and hits the thing right when it hits the water. That fish wasn't sitting up against that rock. That fish was out facing that rock, looking up at it. You know what I mean? Waiting for something to come by. So, and that's exactly how I fish the crazy shad. It's really a fantastic bait.
Very nice. Nate might have answered his own question here. Mm-hmm. What color do you go with on lakes that don't have shad but have bluegill?
Okay, so I actually have painted some bluegill patterns that they are in the crazy shad. I have blueback herring patterns. Moon eye shad is any bait fish representation, really. But when you have a lake that really does not have shad in it, I still go with Smoky Joe first, always. I am never not with this bait on first. If they're missing it, or if they're coming up and nipping at it, then I'll switch colors, because I've found that sometimes if you switch a color, they engulf the thing. But I'll let the bass tell me that before I start getting all goofy on color.
All right. So tell me the difference on why you would use a crazy shad over like a P60, a pop R. What's the, what, I mean, why?
The subtleties and the sound of those blades. The sound of those blades is magical. It's not a big kaplunk. It's not a big gurgle. It's not like a buzzbait. It is subtle. And if you've ever heard, bait fish or bluegills flitting at the surface, where they're just ticking and flicking at the surface, that's what this thing sounds like. It's just real super subtle. And for some reason, especially during the spawn, the bass can't take it. I mean, that thing's over there. I can't tell you how many bedding bass I've caught on this thing. It's just crazy. It's all about the sound and the subtleness. Like with the P71, the P71 is a fantastic topwater bait because it's a pop R and can be chugged and gurgled like a pop R, but the P71 could be walked like a Super Spook Junior. And so the P71 has places that it is just magical. The guys in Tennessee back in the old days used to take the original P71s on flipping sticks and flip them in brush tops and walk them in the brush, in holes in the brush tops, walk them in place. And that technique was psycho. In fact, Kelly Powers, I think, is the guy who really got onto that first. And he was actually, if I'm not mistaken, was throwing it on a smaller rod, like almost like a pistol grip rod. So mm-hmm. he can just roll cast it right underneath overhanging branches. And he would put that thing, dude. That guy was amazing. I mean, he would put that thing in, you know, a baseball size hole in the biggest treetop in the planet and get it right in there. You know, now if they don't engulf the thing, getting them out's issue because you got treble hook hanging out. But you got to hook them before you worry about not getting them in the boat. You got to get them hooked first. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I was trying to think who's – so obviously, you know, you have the Kelly Power and the Zell Roland mm-hmm. With the Pop R and – or Craig Power, not Kelly Power.
Yeah, Craig. What am I?
That's fine. I'm trying to think, are there prop bait guys? Is there a guy who, like, that's his jam, is the prop bait? Or is it such a niche lure that is not applicable year-round that... But is there a guy who's like, oh, well, of course, there was a prop bait.
Well, if you look at my topwater box, you'd go, yeah, he's the dude. But no, it is a very timely bait. In certain areas, but like on the Coosa River chain and anywhere that there's spotted bass fisheries, I'll have that on in the summer.
Kelly Power is a professional angler too, by the way. There is a Kelly Power.
But yeah, I'll have it tied on in the summer as well. And as soon as the spawn starts, I have a topwater rod with that thing on it. That's just my go-to. Like I'll throw that before I'll throw a pop R. Unless I got a lot of chop on the water, and then I'm going to the P71 or the Super Spook Junior all the way, just because I need more commotion because of the wave mm-hmm. action.
The other thing that we haven't talked about is if we go back to the last couple of shows that we did in the areas where you're talking, and when we broke down the laydowns, mm-hmm. Is a prop bait something that you'll toss around laydowns like the ones that you broke down in the pre-spawn and early spawn too?
100%. 100%, because you could literally milk that thing down a lay down, and you could take your time doing it. So if you've got fish that are cruising in the area, cruising fish, in my opinion, are the hardest ones to catch. Most of the time, a cruising fish, especially in the spring, right before they set up to spawn, they're looking for places to spawn. They're difficult to catch. They're very spooky. If you see them, you got to be really stealthy. You have to make long casts to catch them. But we're not doing a cruising fish show today. But the crazy shad is so subtle and could be fished so slowly that a lot of times, if you're working a blowdown and there's some cruising fish in the area, right? Or they maybe you saw them cruise through the blowdown at one point in time. You work that bait, they might be suspending on the outskirts of that blowdown. They haven't quite set up into that tree yet. You can get them to eat that crazy shad because it's so subtle and you can work it so slow that they can't stand it after a while. It's like a cat. If you ever played with a cat toy, you get them all riled up and then you lay the toy out there, and then all of a sudden you barely move the toy and they pounce on it. That's kind of how it is, in my opinion. You know, so yeah, you can, and I do fish it around blowdowns, stump fields, you know, anywhere I can put it, I'll fish it, to be honest with you.
Has there been a major event one on a prop bait recently?
I'm not sure. I'm really, Florida would be the only one, and basically just because of the Devil's Horse. I mean, Florida would be the only one. The Devil's Horse and the Crazy Shad do the same thing, but you can see the profiles are magnificently different. You know what I mean? They're very different baits. They do different things. They do the same thing as far as make a propping noise, but they're very different in the water. You know, so I even in Florida, to be honest with you, I throw the crazy shad a lot in Florida too. Up north, I throw it all the time. Spotted bass fisheries, I throw it all the time. I really learned how to fish it on the Ohio River. Here,
That sounds exciting.
I'll tell you two prop baits that I learned how to fish on the Ohio River. And back in the day, we had some amazing spotted bass fishing up here on that river. It has now subsequently turned mostly into a smallmouth fishery. The largemouth fishing has waned a bit. Some of the Ohio River pools still have good largemouth fishing in it, but the smallmouth are starting to take over, really, especially in some of the northern pools. The tiny torpedo and the crazy shad. At one time, there were three baits that I would never go to the Ohio River without. And that's a C77 Big O in an old color called G Finish, and then the Crazy Shad and the Tiny Torpedo. Those were the absolute, the you needed those three baits no matter when you hit that river system. Okay, that's where I learned how to fish the Crazy Shad. When I started leaving our state to fish, I fished a team tournament trail. Well, it was half team, half fishermen against fishermen. The trail, it was the Yadkin team trail or some stuff like that they called it. I started fishing spotted bass fisheries, and I used that crazy shad, and it was like, holy smokes, you know what I mean? So then I realized that the spotted bass, they grooved on this bait like hardcore. So it became one of my mainstays on spotted bass fisheries, even Lay Lake in the Classic, I threw this thing. But that's when I really started saying, okay, now wait a minute, because there's a lot of similarities between spotted bass behavior and smallmouth behavior. And so now I started translating this bait into the smallmouth arena, and it's been nothing but magical. So I throw it. I mean, I throw it from the beginning of the spawn till post spawn, and even the beginning of summer, I'm throwing it. Unless it's wavy out, then I got to go to something to displace more water and make more noise.
You mentioned that tiny that torpedo.
Yeah, the tiny torpedo.
I got very sidetracked, but I got to show this. This is wild. So here is the hold on. I gotta figure out how to do this now.
Yeah, please.
This is sketchy as heck. Here is the Cold Steel mini torpedo. It is a double-sided throwing spike. It is used for target throwing, hunting, and self-defense.
Yeah, great.
And
great.
You chuck this thing, and it says both hit with terrifying power and are very effective. And all it is like a carbon steel that's laser sharp on either end. And you chuck this thing like a throwing star at people.
And hey, the good news is it's only $24.99.
Anyway, what is the difference between? And I know Charlie Hartley is a huge fan of the torpedo.
Oh yeah, he throws it like his.
But
like
what is the difference between the? When are you going to throw the torpedo, and when are you going to throw the crazy shad?
The torpedo is a single prop in the back. The tiny torpedo. I will throw the crazy shad first because I absolutely love the bait.
You just I mean, the action a little bit better.
Yeah, I love the sound it makes. I've had such great success with it. It's insane. Now, I told you, you know, I cut my teeth on the tiny torpedo and the crazy shad, but I kind of gravitated more towards the crazy shad.
Okay, so let's say I don't have any of these baits at all. Like, this doesn't, to me, it seems like you could get five of these things and be set.
Absolutely.
Like, you don't have to have a tackle, like, even though you do, but you don't have to have a tackle box full of prop baits. Get you a couple.
Yeah, and here's a really cool thing. I'd get Smokey Joe. I'd get Chrome Blue or Chrome Black.
Can we pull these up?
Yeah, you can go on LureNet and pull them right up.
Let's see if I can find this.
You know, based on my experience, I keep it super simple. I just make sure them things sound right. I put the double split rings on them.
And it's a cotton cordel bait, right?
Cotton cordel, yes, sir.
All right. I have located it.
We have power. We have contact.
All right. So
okay, so there you go. Okay, so here that okay. So if you go to the one go to the bluegill perchy looking one. Oh, now that right there. So if you got a lake that doesn't have shad in it, that's a really good representation because it's kind of perchy, it's kind of bluegilly. And then of course clear water lakes, I'm throwing Smokey Joe and the blue nose one. That's Smokey Joe, and then that's the blue nose one. Blue clear. Okay. You can go to Moon Eye Shad, which I don't know if they even have it on there anymore.
Nope.
All right, so Moon Eye Shad is gone. Good. The ones I got,
Smokey Joe and clear blue nose in stock.
Yeah, so if you look at my crazy shad selection, it's really simple because I have Smokey Joe. And Smokey Joe. I have Chrome Blue and Moon Eye Shad, which if you don't have Moon Eye Shad, you can always get Bluegill. And you don't need a lot because.
And you're tying it direct.
Tying it direct.
Making sure that the blades spin.
Absolutely.
Not doing much with it. No. Adding a double split ring
and a tail feather.
Your heart desires a little sparse tail feather on the back.
Correct. And it's really that simple. It's probably one of the easiest baits on earth to fish. Mm-hmm. It's just you have to, as a new prop bait thrower, let's say, you have to get yourself tuned into the sound. The sound is everything to me.
So it's like a buzz bait. If you've never thrown one before, like sometimes you'll get a co-angler in the boat and you'll be like, yeah, dude, that buzz bait sounds awful. But I've thrown a buzz bait a ton, and then that's when you're at the boat ramp and you're like, hey, bro, come over here. Listen to
right.
this. And then you pull
and
it out and you
chirping and squeaking.
And then
right.
the guy next to you is like, oh, dude, you're going to catch him on that. And everybody, you can always hear the guy testing his buzz bait
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. And then, you know, when you get one that sounds right, because everybody, all of a sudden, the guys in the know, they're all turning around looking where that buzz bait is.
So it's the same thing on a prop bait. There's going to be subtle differences in in any prop bait, whether it's a balsa bait or a plastic bait, like a crazy shad.
100% correct. The crazy shad, in my opinion, is probably one of the most passed over prop baits. You know, the boy howdy is a good prop bait too. The boy howdy is very much like a devil's horse, except that it's plastic, where the devil's horse is balsa. You know what I mean? So you have to look at your sound, how it's sitting in the water, what you prefer to throw, basically. And, you know, I don't make it complicated. I have about three colors in the crazy shad, and they work everywhere I've ever been.
And then just to clarify this, soy turkey, which is an interesting name there.
Okay.
That does not sound delicious, but size and type. I know you went over this, but like I said, right, we just did a quick and dirty overview of the bait and that stuff. So run through your line again.
Okay. So here, my main line for the crazy shad will be 10 or 15 pound braid. I don't like to get too heavy with the braid. It's not necessary. And then my leader line will always be monofilament, never fluorocarbon. And I'll go anywhere from, you know, 12, 14, 17. They're not going to be line shy on it. They won't be. And that's really that simple. I won't tie direct to the braid because I don't like the twisting around the prop, the front prop. That makes me angry to a fault because that's a wasted cast.
You ever broken a rod on the water? You ever chucked one in the lake? You ever had a meltdown like that?
Oh, dude, I have melted.
Really?
Yeah, I melted down. I don't melt down. I melt down over two things and only two things. If I'm fishing somewhere and some dude pulls in front of me, I lose my mind. Like I literally and did somebody ask that question?
No, that was just me. Because you were talking about how much the prop angered you, and I could just picture you out there with braid wrapped around the front prop, and you just javelin throwing the entire rig in the middle of some tiny lake in Ohio, going, "Guess what? Ain't gonna wrap no more."
Right, you're done. No, I have meltdowns when people encroach on an area that I'm fishing that's not big enough for two people, and they just slide right in there. I lose my mind over that. And the other thing I lose my mind over is when I'm having moments of complete, I don't even know how to put this, but like if I'm like, let's say I'm skipping floating pontoons on docks.
Okay.
You know how you come to the split in between the two pontoons?
Yep. You get one shot at it.
When you're in the groove, dude, you're just, and it's going right underneath all of it.
Yep.
There was a time this spring I was on a lake and I was skipping underneath these floating these floating docks. And I was like 1 inch off on every single shot. And it would dunk right into the bottom of that floating pontoon, and I was losing my mind because for whatever the reason, well, I know exactly what the reason was. I switched to an 8 foot rod instead of a 7.5, and my timing was off on it. And I must have flipped 30 of those and didn't hit one of them. I was so pissed. I just left. I said, I'm leaving. I'm not even doing this. I'm leaving. And then I waited till later on in the day and then went back and redid it. And then I was hitting it because I had to get used to that 8 footer. And then once I got back, and then I was skipping it underneath them. I'm like, oh yeah, this is how it's supposed to be done. You know what I mean? But initially, dude, if it wasn't my 8 foot rod, I would have probably broke it in a million pieces. I was so mad. But yeah.
I only get really mad on the jackhammers when you're skipping them around docks. You ever had it where if you hit the jackhammer right, it will take the hook, that flipping hook that's in it, and it will basically bend it in half back towards the head of the bait. And
Okay, so are you talking about actually bending the hook itself?
Yes. Yeah. If you're skipping it around the posts and pilings and stuff,
and you hit one.
Dead center one, I guess the way it skips, it always hits that and it bends it. So like, dude, you'll go through like two or three jackhammers on a row of docks. That just drives me absolutely nuts.
Well, that's an expensive proposition, Haas.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I've had some experiences where I get a little frustrated, to say the least.
You know what else frustrates you? People who go to lurenet.com and don't use the code BASTALK, all capital letters, to get 15% off through the month of May.
That is outstanding. You guys, I have to be so honest with you. We've had a lot going on here this weekend at my house, and I completely forgot that today was going to be the live show. I completely
BTL day four on day three because I'm headed to Minnesota.
100% spaced it. So I'm
That's
like,
why okay. I texted you. I figured it would be.
I'm so glad you did. So I said, okay, when all the people leave and everything settles down, I'll have all day today to prepare something. And so sometime yesterday, Matt texts me. He goes, hey, remember, we're live tomorrow. I'm like, uh-oh. I have nothing. And so I hopped on LureNet YouTube to see which one of my videos popped up. And the Crazy Shad video's up there. So I'm like, sweet. That's perfect timing because this is starting to happen here on a lot of our lakes right now. So I was really happy to see that because I didn't have to prepare anything because I do it all the time. So it's like second nature. I don't even think about it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it was really good. So yeah, use that code, guys. Capital Bass Talk, one word, 15% off, and buy some Crazy Shads. Try them out. Double split rings, tail feathered hook, very sparsely tied tail feather hook, and you guys are going to be amazed. You'll be amazed at the fish you catch.
I know we're doing show ideas. Have you done a redfin show yet? Aren't we kind of getting close to that time of the year?
Yeah, we are. And no, I have not.
Okay. Are you?
I have not.
You know how to, I mean, is that one of your jams too? Like, are you familiar with that?
Yeah, it's a jam of mine.
Or is that it's something you wanted to keep under your hat or?
No, not
can we
necessarily.
Can we do a redfin show? That was more kind of selfish for me because I've got a bunch of them and I
know
what you're right.
Yeah, I mean the redfin. I don't want to get into it today.
No. I was just saying before we're doing a little bit of housekeeping, a little maintenance here.
Right. I love the redfin, dude. I absolutely love it. I love waking it. I absolutely obliterate fish on it. I do a few things a little different than most guys with mine, but. Amazingly enough, I throw it on 10 pound braid.
Oh, wow.
I throw it on 10 pound braid and I throw it with a monofilament leader. Oh my gosh, man.
Should I not have said that? I apologize.
Oh, it's all right, man.
I had one of the best
days on Table Rock of my life with that bait.
Yeah, that's an Ozark deal. Justin wants to know what size split rings, if you're adding an extra split ring to the,
make them exactly the same size that are on the bait.
Okay. And that's what are those, four, size four hooks?
No, I don't have a clue. I don't know what size. Just exactly the same size one on the bait.
Because it's pretty weight sensitive, isn't it?
This bait, it can be. You don't want it too low in the water column, but you don't want it too high in the water column either. You know, I do a lot of tricks with Crazy Shads. Maybe one day I'll get into a really neat, nifty bait hack on this bait.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's one of my favorites. I have to be honest with you. God, I love fishing that bait.
Awesome. Well, I think for kind of a show without it, I learned some stuff today. I'm going to get a couple more prop baits under my belt, and I know that it is a it is a very viable option for a lot of the country, even if it is too cold where you are, something you can spend not a lot of money on and get you all the right stuff and kind of know where to throw it now. So, like I said, it's been an interesting week for both of us, mainly for you, Frank. So I appreciate you taking time to do day four.
Easy, man.
On day three. Now, I should be back in town for the foreseeable future, the next month or two. So we should be back on schedule. Should be live. My next big tournament until, you know, after this one is not until the 4th of July on Oneida. So,
outstanding. It's a good time to be on Oneida, except for the boat traffic will be
Everyone's going to have to deal with it.
Oh, yeah, dude. Oneida's a great lake. Oneida and Champlain, two of my favorites up north.
They are amazing.
By far, yeah.
Maybe I can stop by on the way up there. We'll have to work on that.
Absolutely.
The end of June or something like that, where it is. Maybe.
Yeah, bring it on.
In person. All right.
Yeah, be good.
All right, this has been another edition of Day 4. This time on Day 3, we will see you guys on Monday. Take care.